All right, so I just quickly want to introduce myself. I'm not the pastor here. The pastor actually is in Rome, a very biblical city, together with his wife to visit her family because she's from Italy. We are visitors. My name is Gernot. This is my wife, Sabina, and my two daughters. I have no idea where my son is. If you hear younger girls crying somewhere, probably he's close somewhere. And we are really excited to be here this morning because Santa Ponsa Community Church is a very special place to us. We're friends of this church since over 15 years. And actually, we're just coming back from an extended journey. My wife and I, together with a great team, over the last 15 years, we built a ministry in Germany, which is called Gospel Tribe. It's a 2 years residential Bible and missions college and a missions organization. We send lots of young people on short-term mission trips. Actually, this trip that Steffi did to India was also a little bit through our organization. And that's our heart, you know, like to really see young people excited about Jesus and then share the gospel in the nations. And about a year ago, we decided that after 15 years, we wanted to take some time out. And our trip had three purposes. We wanted to get some rest after 15 years. It felt amazing not to enter into the fall season and having to prepare the whole year out and having new students and getting new staff on track. So it was just a time of relaxing. And then we said, after 15 years, we want to go to some of the ministries around the world that we find really inspiring. So this trip, it brought us to the Dominican Republic and then to the West Coast, to Texas. We moved on to Hawaii. The last 4 months we spent in Asia, in Thailand, in the Philippines and Myanmar, and met some really amazing ministries and people that we were able to share life with and just get a lot of inspiration for more than a decade to come. And the third purpose we had was that we said, we want to be involved with ministry where it's not about leading something, where it's not about preaching. This is actually, I think, the third time I'm preaching in the last 9 months, and it felt amazing not needing to do that. Not leading, not preaching, but just doing the simple work that Jesus and the disciples did. So we took some time in the Philippines where we were in an orphanage, and we just played with the kids, basketball. They don't know what soccer is. They just play basketball in the Philippines. Oh, they're really small. And just encouraged people there and went out to the islands, you know, after a typhoon had destroyed the area and just met people there in need. And it was an amazing, amazing time. And now we came here to Mallorca for the last leg of our journey before we go home to Germany and try to implement what we've learned over the last year. Hey, so last week I was just praying and thinking about what I'm supposed to speak to you about this morning. And God put it on my heart to speak to you about a couple. And if you know your Bible a little bit, you probably realize there are not a lot of couples mentioned in the Bible, but I found one. Their names are Priscilla and Aquila, and I found them to be incredibly inspiring people. And I just felt I should preach about them, and I hope it will challenge you today. It will inspire you and say, hey, after this message, I'm going to make some changes in my life. I've titled this message, Martin, maybe you can put it up. I've titled this message, The Type of Christians Every Church Thrives On. The type of Christians every church thrives on. You know, like, there are some Christians, they go to churches and they make it hard for the church, and there's some Christians and they go to churches and they cause churches to thrive. And my desire for Santa Ponsa Community Church and the church you're coming from, if you're visiting here on the island, is that it would be a thriving church. Before we enter into the message, I want to show you a picture. Maybe you recognize two people on that picture. That's when we were in Thailand and we met Bart and Simone. Did you see them in the back? It was amazing. Ate there every evening. It was a beautiful island. All right, let's get into the lives of Priscilla and Aquila. They are really amazing people. They're mentioned in the Bible 5 times. It's like every time you read one of the scriptures, you get like a snapshot of their lives. And the first thing that really strikes me, you don't need to read the text yet, I'm just going to give you some general introduction, is that they were urban city dwellers constantly migrating from one place to the next. And chances are high that if you live on Mallorca, that one day you were in England, in Germany, in Holland, in the US, and you said, okay, let's check out this island, Mallorca. I'm sure most of you were not born here. And something caused you to say, I'm going to make this my home. I read up a little bit on Mallorca, you know, and I don't know if you knew that there are 153 different nations living on Mallorca. Were you aware of that? 153 nations, and bearing in mind that all of Mallorca only has 800,000 people, that's quite a lot. You know, and if you talk to people here, why they came to Mallorca, there's so many reasons. There's some people that just like the sun. You know, like I said, I worked, I made some money, I'm going to relocate, I'm going to migrate to Mallorca. I heard that it's the highest life expectancy in Europe with 83 plus years. So I'll just move here, enjoy the sun, flee from the winter. And that's what brought you here. But then there's other people, you know, like if you go to the beach and you find, African people and they're trying to sell you sunglasses, most of them come from Senegal or Nigeria. I mean, they moved here, they migrated here because they were looking for an opportunity, they were looking for work. You know, like I said, I have to physically leave my country because this is a better place. I don't care much about the sun, there's plenty of that in Africa, but I'm looking for better working conditions. And Priscilla and Aquila, they were migrants. And if you look into the Bible, there are seasons when they had to migrate from one place to the next simply because they were kicked out. You know, there was time of crisis. So they started off in Rome, and then Caesar kicked all the Jews out of Rome. So they had to move out of Rome, moved to Corinth, the next metropolitan city. And there they met Paul, and after 1.5 years, Paul said, hey, I feel like I should move on to Ephesus. Will you come with me? And this time it was not forced. This time they said, we'll leave Ephesus because we want to be on a mission with Paul. And then in the end, you find them in Rome again. They just went back. But they were people feeling happy in metropolitan cities of the time. It's like, you know, like if you would put it into modern context, it's the type of people who say, we live in New York, we moved to Singapore, from Singapore to Dubai, and in Dubai we said, well, New York was really great, you know, like we really feel God calling us back, and they just moved there again. And my feeling is that some of you, you have that in your blood. You know, like you say, yeah, I'm willing to move. I'm willing to migrate. That's why I came here. You know, like I'm not bound to one place. So maybe you can identify with them to some extent. But that's not the most important thing about them. You know, here Paul in Romans 16, he greets them while they're back in Rome. And he says, greet Prisca and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who for my life risked their own necks, to whom not only do I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles, also greet the church that is in their house. Hey, wow, that's really a compliment, huh? So the Apostle Paul says about them, they are my fellow workers. You know, like when we were in Thailand, on this sabbatical, on this time out that we were having in Asia, every morning I went to the terrace of a hotel, and you know, like, and there were people sitting there at the workstations with their laptops, and you start conversations, you know, like, and they say, and you ask, so, hey, so what are you doing here? They were having white skin, so obviously they came from Europe or the US. And you said, well, you know, Thailand is so cheap, and you know, I'm working online so I can be anywhere in the world, you know, like, and so here I can drink my passion fruit shake for a euro, and life's good, and I have a house at the beach for 500 euros a month. And so, I mean, they were basically there to enjoy life, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But here, Priscilla and Aquila, they might have found themselves in metropolitan cities that some people might have liked and others not, but they were focused on a mission. Paul says they were my fellow workers in the gospel. They had a higher purpose than just enjoying life. They were people on a mission. And then it says here, they're the type of people, they risked their own necks for me. If you know the Bible a little bit, you know when Paul was in Ephesus, there was this huge riot. You know, the gospel spread like wildfire and Christians were really in danger. Paul was really in danger because he kind of initiated all that. And probably they helped him in that season. They did things where Paul says they risked their own necks, they risked their own lives for me. People of character. You know, when we were sitting in the Philippines in February, the whole Ukraine crisis broke loose. And to us, this was not just a tragedy. To us, it was very personal. Because before we started the Reach Mallorca outreaches, you know, like if you don't know, we come every summer, we bring lots of young people to reach tourists at the beach. For many years, we were doing outreaches into Ukraine. We are friends with pastors, with churches there. And so when we heard about the war breaking loose, it was very personal. And I just thought, we can't just sit here in the Philippines and do nothing about it. So I contacted this one pastor friend that I have, and I said, how can we help you? And he said, well, we're taking care of 20 churches in eastern Ukraine. They're kind of small partner churches, that, and with our resources, we try to help them. So we will go to eastern Ukraine, and we'll try to get them out. We're expecting refugees, and they came, you know, like at some point after a week or two, it was over 100 people every night coming, mounting up, you know, like, so they transformed their auditorium, their whole church, into just one big asylum, you know, where people would sleep on the street, sleep on the floor. Anyway, so they said, yeah, we're taking care of those people, and if they come to us, we can't take them all, so we'll have to send them on towards Europe. So would you be willing to take people? I'll tell you some more about that later on, but bottom line was they were having people from their church sitting in a car, driving to eastern Ukraine, putting people in the car and driving them back right through the war zone. That's what I mean with risking your necks. You know, like their church is in central Ukraine, so they could say, well, thank God there's no fighting in our city yet. Thank God that no rocket ever hit our city. But they said, it's not about how we can be away from the danger as much as possible, but there is a mission and we need to help our brothers and sisters and we are risking our necks. And then one day on the Facebook profile of this pastor friend of me, he was making a post with a picture of a young man and was saying, this is his name. His car just got hit by a rocket. So he's driving into eastern Ukraine. He was loading refugees in. And it's not a happy end story. The car was hit by a missile and exploded. He was dead and he's leaving his wife and his kids. And he was just willing to do that. You know, like he said, it was the same thing. You know, like I mean, those are the type of people in that church who drive to eastern Ukraine. It's not about that they love adventure. It's not about that their life is too boring. It's not about that they don't have those feelings inside of them, you know, like what will happen to me if I die. But it just say we need to do it. We need to help those people. We need to risk our lives to help our brothers and sisters. So Prisca, Aquila and Prisca, they were really people of character. And then there's one other interesting thing about them before I'll tell you a little bit about their ministry. I don't know if you realized that Prisca's name is mentioned first. It's not Aquila and Priscilla or Aquila and Prisca, it's Prisca and Aquila. And that's not Middle Eastern ancient politeness. No, let's mention the name of the woman first. You know, like whenever in Middle Eastern culture or just simply in the Bible, whenever you read two names, there is a point about what name is mentioned first. So if it says Priscilla and Aquila, you can be absolutely sure that Priscilla was the prominent one, that she was the one that attention was focused on. So if you come from a church tradition, you know, like where roles were very complementary, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, like you probably brought up in a tradition, you're like the man, he's the one who leads, and the man has the vision, and the woman follows, and maybe you're not that type of person, but you feel like you've been pushed into that mold. I don't want to open up a huge topic this morning. I just want to say the Bible says it was Priscilla and Aquila, and there could be a lot of different reasons for that. I don't think in any way it means that Priscilla was this dominant woman, you know, like, and Aquila was just standing there and asking, can I say something? It's not about that, you know, like, it's not about that she dominated him, but either she had a lot of money, and that is why she's mentioned first. So Aquila did something smart, he married up, you know? I don't think it was the time of Germany's Next Top Model, you know, where it was just her looks, you know, like she looks so great, so let's make it Priscilla Aquila. No. Maybe she had a lot of money. Maybe she had grown to influence. Maybe she came from a noble family. Maybe she was just the more visionary and vocal one. And that is absolutely okay. You know, like if you're married to somebody and you're a unity together and you find your wife to be the more visionary one, the one with more ideas, more with the gift of faith, maybe even able to articulate herself better, that is absolutely okay. If you know who you are, you know, and if you can rest in yourself and you know who God made you to be, don't try to be weird about that, you know. It is Priscilla and Aquila. So, what did their ministry look like? I wanna go with you into another text. We find this in Acts 18, verses 1 to 3. After these things, this is talking about the Apostle Paul, he left Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. So this is what I've been talking about. This is why they were forced to leave Rome and move to Corinth. He came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working for, by trade, they were tent makers. So I just want to point out two things in this text that I find very, very striking. Paul just came from Athens, and his mission didn't go very well. It was unsuccessful. A lot of conflict, you know, not many people wanted to believe. And if you keep on reading in Acts 18, it also, the impression is created that Paul was a little discouraged. So it says, for example, after some of his fellow workers came, was the first moment he got confidence to preach the gospel again. A little bit onward in that chapter, you know, it says, God says to Paul, do not be afraid of what's happening here. I have a large people in this city. So Paul was probably in a place where he was a little bit discouraged. He came to Corinth. He didn't know anyone. And there's Priscilla and Aquila, and the first thing they do is they invite him into their house. Now, you know, you might think, oh, what a privilege, you know, like to host the Apostle Paul. But really, let that sink in. Paul was discouraged, you know, like they didn't know him. So if you've been around people that are a little bit discouraged, if you've been around people that maybe even tend to be depressive, if you are around people, you know, like that don't really have direction in their life, in the phase of their lives they're in, you know that can be really training. And if you meet with somebody for 2 hours for a coffee, you feel like, wow, this is sucking out my energy. Yeah? It is true. You know, like if you're around people and you want to minister to them, you love them, it might be people who seek your help, it might be your friends, and you do it with all your heart, but still it's true. You know, it's training you. And now, if you meet them for a coffee after 2 hours, you can say, oh, I need to go home, I need to pick up the kids, or, you know, like I have another appointment. But if you have those people in your house, then there's no way to escape. You know, like, and we're not talking, you know, about palaces and mansions, we're talking about houses, you know, like, where we just heard it, you know, like from Steffi in India, you know, like there are 8 people sharing a room. I don't think that was the case with Akilah and Priscilla, but still, you know, like it is very close-knit communities, and you have that person around you all the time. But they were tremendously hospitable. So we just were in the Philippines, and the leader of the whole ministry, you know, like they have dozens and dozens of kids, and they get them from the street, you know, where they're sniffing clue and where their parents are abandoning them and where they're sleeping on the street as young as 3, 4, 5 years old. And they take them into the center, and then they raise them there. They give them an education. They have a ministry training school. They're doing this typhoon relief work. So a major, major ministry. And it's run by a friend. His name is Manuel. And he came as a 19-year-old intern to that ministry and loved it so much that he said, with 19 years old, I'll never leave the Philippines without having booked my next flight. You know, he just fell in love with the place. So he said he couldn't stand the feeling going back to Germany without knowing there's a return flight booked, that he'd be able to be back there. Eventually, he married one of the girls that grew up in the center. And because he was 19 and she was kind of 16 that time, and she had other friends growing up in the center, they became his friends too. And today they live in a tiny, tiny house with 6 and 7 people. And then the sister of his wife calls, I need a place to stay. And her brother is in prison and he's out again and staying with them. And he just completely does it happily. You know, it's like a house with 2 rooms. I guess they shared a bed alone. They just got a baby. And it's 8 people living in that house. You know, like, I don't know how that sounds to you, how that would feel to you. But that's kind of the picture I have when I think about Akilah and Priscilla. Wealthy enough to have a house, probably with a couple of rooms. But sharing it with people and sharing it with training people. But if I have Manuel in front of me, you know, like, I feel like, wow, he's happy. He doesn't feel like this is this tremendous sacrifice he's bringing every day. Because in his heart, he's on a mission, you know. So suddenly this pastor from Ukraine, he calls and he says, yeah, we have people from our church, they need to leave the country. We have people from the East, they need to leave the country. So I make a post on Facebook and I say, are there people in the area of Karlsruhe, this is where we're from, that could potentially house Ukrainian refugees? We don't know who they are. We know they come from churches. Some people don't. That was before the UN said there are 10 million people on the move. It was just the initial days. Could you help? So I made this post, and the type of person I am, and I'm not trying to be that in the future. I always do something, and then afterwards I think. Or I do something, and I think, ah, it's not going to be a problem, and suddenly I'm stuck with all the details, and I realize, wow, this is a ton of work. So I just thought, yeah, sure, I'll ask people, and then people say yes, and then those refugees will just go there. And then I thought, oh, okay, so who's coordinating all that? Who's answering the questions? Who's making sure they get there? Who's clarifying how many rooms there are, how many people are coming, how many cats and dogs? So I realized, if this is supposed to work, I very quickly need to find somebody who will do that type of work. So there was like this small WhatsApp group of about 10 people created, of people willing to take somebody in, and I just wrote an emergency message, and I said, is somebody willing to coordinate this? It might be 5 or 10 people. Would you be able to do that? And this lady, I've never seen her before, I've never met her before, she said, yeah, I could do that, I'm good at organizing, I speak some Russian. No idea who she was. And so I thought, well, I can't just give that job to her, you know, like, I mean, I need to know that person at least, you know. So we made a 1-hour Zoom call, and I had a good feeling, so I put her in place. Make this story short. Her name is Elena. They've taken in 3 kids themselves, you know, that stay with them, just kids that they take care of that didn't have parents here in Germany. And she started from that day, it's about 8 weeks ago, to give 6 hours a day, week by week, to this whole project. By now, she has over 100 families that she received from Ukraine and just distribute it on families. And that is tremendously difficult. Some of the people are traumatized. You know, like they are afraid. They don't just say, oh yeah, where's this place? I'll come. Some of them come with 6 or 7 children. They are not coming from third world countries, you know, where they lived in a hut. So if you say, well, I can offer 2 rooms, and they say, well, but we are 8 people. Then they say, we'll come, and they're not coming. Then you have those people saying, we will receive them. But then in the last minute, they think, well, we're only taking women between 25 and 27 and kids and, you know, like, and only dogs of that type. And, you know, it's tremendously difficult. But all in all, you know, like there are over 100 families that just said, we'll take other families in, and we know food and taking them to the authorities and all that, that's financially going to be on us. I love it. You know, like some families, the kids got together and they said, hey, we want an Ukrainian family. And they said, they can have our rooms. So all the kids moved together, you know, like 3 or 4 kids into 1 room. And they said the other 2 rooms the Ukrainian families can have. And so it became a family mission. You know, and if you have traumatized people coming from a war zone, that's, you got to pay a toll for that. But it's just, you know, where people realize, I want to be in it. I want to do that. That's the type of people Akilah and Priscilla were. And then, look, that's also what I love. They don't just open their house, but they realize Paul needs work. He needs to work. And so what Akilah does is he opens his business to him. I don't know who of you are business owners. You have some kind of business going on, or you have some kind of influence in your job. So what Akilah said is, Paul, come work with me. He didn't care about any profit he was losing or any customers he might be losing to Paul. He said, I want that person. I want to give him a basis that he can work with me and through my influence. And I just want to give you a couple of examples that I just find amazing, you know, like how you can do that. Maybe you are involved in a business and you're making lots of money. So I hear a lot of people, they say, when they make lots of money with their business, they say, in a sense, time is money. And what they mean with that is, if I give money to something, like I make a donation of 1,000, of 10,000, of 100,000, I don't know, in essence, I am giving my time because I'm working as a businessman. Usually people who have a lot of money, they're working very hard. You know, like it's not just that it just falls into their lap. And they say, so when I give that, what I'm actually giving is my time. I don't have the time necessarily to go on a mission trip to India. I don't have the time to be part of every church program that's being offered because I have a lot of responsibility, a lot of coworkers. It takes a lot of energy for me. But when I give my time. You know, I give something of myself. So if you have a business, that's one way you can do that. You know, like you just give money, and for people, it's just a check they receive or a donation, but you actually know you're giving something of yourself into the lives of people. There's another example that I found amazing, you know, like to just illustrate what Akilah is doing with Paul. I have 2 friends, they went through our Bible school, and they went to Morocco to do church planting in Marrakesh. And you know, like if you're moving to a Muslim country and you're living in a neighborhood, very quickly people will ask you, so what are you doing here? Why are you here? And then you just can't say, well, I'm a missionary trying to evangelize you, you know? It's not gonna run very well. So you gotta have a legitimate way of staying where you are. And that usually is a business. That is usually a job. So there's a big company in southern Germany. And they are connected to that missions organization that sends people into the Muslim world. And they said, well, what we are intentionally going to do, we are providing sales job in Muslim countries to people that are moving there as missionaries. And that way, they will have enough income to live there, and they will also have enough time to go after their mission purposes, and they have a legitimacy to be in the country. So they're offering people a visa, a way to stay, legitimacy, and they're doing that through their influence. So their first idea is not, is this the best suitable person, but how can we use our business and the success of our business to really provide jobs for people? So my friend, he worked as one of the managers for a while, and then he did exactly what Akila did. He had a leather business, you know, like Akila, tent making. It's about manufacturing leather. So they opened a leather business. If you go down to Pagera or Santa Ponsa, if you have people selling you leather bags, probably they're from Morocco. And they just opened a leather business, a factory, and they're employing Moroccans that they work there, and while they're working there, they're hearing the gospel. That's amazing, huh? So that's a way of evangelizing. You know, like people who are in secular ministry, in secular work, living regular lives, they don't have so much time for 10,000 programs. They need to incorporate their mission into their daily routine, into their work, into their lives. Does that make any sense? Think about Brenda. Some of you might not know it, but this church had a Bible school. So there were always 20, 25, 30 people coming from America, and they wanted to do Bible school here. Now, how are you going to house them? Try to go to any apartment owner and say, well, we're renting your apartment all year long, and we're going to cram 10 people into two rooms. Is that okay with you? Who's going to say yes to that? Try to rent something in Mallorca at all. Try to buy something. It's impossible. I know Brenda's story a little bit, and I don't know if how much of I can tell about that, but she came here, and she just started. How old were you, Brenda, when you came?
I can't remember now.
But it's decades. It's decades. So she came and she just started to make investments into apartments. And at some point she owned a couple of them, you know, like, and she was just able to use her form of work and her form of business. She was smart about doing those things to provide a basis for ministry, for people being trained and being sent back to all those nations they came from. And today, hopefully working as you know, like as people who bring forth the, you know, like who propel the kingdom of God forward. So it's another form, you know, like you're just providing resources. And that's what Akila did. I hope that this inspires you somehow, that you start to wrestle with this idea. How can I use my position in this world, my secular business, what I'm called to do day in, day out? How can I use this for the kingdom? That's exactly what he did. Here's my main point about this. You know, that's what I love about Priscilla and Akila. If you hear me speak this morning, and I'm speaking, you know, about preaching, about having a church in their house, how we read it in Romans, if we're speaking about relocating for kingdom purposes, migrating to another place, you know what comes to your mind? You're thinking about pastors. Oh yeah, they preach and teach. And that's their job. That's their role. My role is to be here and to listen to them, to their enlightenment and their wisdom and their deep Bible knowledge. Yeah, so I do that. I love to do that. It's wonderful, you know, like being a church with good teaching. There's nothing wrong with that. But you know, if you think about preaching and teaching, you think, oh, that's the role of a pastor. Oh, you know, like relocating for the purposes of God, that's what missionaries do. Like this elite caste with the special calling who move from one place to the next, you know, like we associate that with that profile. Oh yeah, and planting, you know, like having your house as a church where you invite people in to live with you, provide them with opportunity, you know, work and all that stuff. That's kind of the evangelist missionary profile. I am just a lay person. You know, like I'm just a good Christian. That is a type of ministry belongs into a different category. You know, and what Priscilla and Akila are teaching us is, they're saying, hey, we are working day in, day out. We are not apostles. We just tend to live in cities, have a house, work from morning to evening, a hard, tough business, you know, like with leather, manufacturing things. But any minute that we have in our business, we try to integrate the mission, and every spare time we have, we try to propel the mission forward. We are lay people sold out to the mission of Jesus. And I just hope that this message this morning, you know, like it stirs up something in you. You say, well, I'm just a lay person. I never went to Bible school. I never signed up to be a pastor, evangelist, or missionary. But you know, if I read their example, if I hear about what they did, something inside of me rises where it says, I want to live a life like that. One last point. I'm going to finish soon. So here's another glimpse into their lives. So there are in Corinth, we know they have a church in their house, we know they have a leather business, we know they're very hospitable. And now look what happens. A Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by birth, an eloquent man, came to Ephesus, and he was mighty in the scriptures. It's a young charismatic preacher. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord and being fervent in spirit, so he had passion, you know, like, I don't know what passionate people do with you. It's like, what type of drug did he take, you know? Keep them at a distance or invite them in. I don't know how you deal with passionate people. Fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, being acquainted only with the baptism of John. And he began to speak out boldly in the synagogue. So I just imagined the scene, you know? Like, I don't know if it's accurate. It's just my fantasy, you know? But I think it's probably a Saturday morning. That's when the synagogue met, and people are coming to the synagogue like every week. And suddenly, you know, like Apollos is in town. He's not been announced as guest speaker. He just happens to be there on a Saturday morning. And he sits there. And so we know he's fervent in spirit. You know, he loves to discuss. They say that further on. You know, like he loves to prove, you know, the faith. And he's speaking and teaching. And so he just comes in and he just begins to open his mouth, you know, and all his passion's flowing out, you know, like in the energy and, you know, like trying to prove Jesus. And people, they kind of look at him and it's like, well, what's going on with this guy, you know? But then look what it says here. But when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. He only knew about the baptism of John. And they took him aside. They realized, wow, this guy is great. He's a diamond, but he still needs some polishing. There's some things that need to be still explained to him. So they took him aside. They say, hey, come with us. So what I wrote down, you know, like Aquila and Priscilla, they were people, they were championing kingdom movers. They discovered somebody with a potential. And they said, whatever we have, whatever we give, we want to pour into that person. You know, I asked myself, what are they doing in essence? They see somebody with a gift, with a passion that's not completely matured yet. And they are secure enough in themselves that they say, we're going to take that person. We're going to serve that person, not patronize him. We're going to mentor that person. We're going to give what we have to just make that person stronger, you know, make that person more effective. And then we just delight and cheer on if that person keeps on changing the world. You know, like there were people actively looking out for people that they can invest themselves in. They didn't see themselves, you know, like as the one who need to receive, as the one who need to be, you know, served and given to. They were looking for those type of people. And that is a wonderful gift. You know, if you get older, I think many things can happen to you. When you come older, some people, they become cynical. You see somebody who's full of passion, let's say for Jesus or for life or opportunity, and you say, oh yeah, I once was like that. But it didn't work out in my life as I thought. So you're going to see what's going to happen. You're going to crush as I did. You know, like it's not going to work in your life. Cynical people. Do you know cynical people? Like they tend to see the world negative. You know, like they tend to see it through their own experience, and because it didn't work in their lives, they become cynical about others who are full of passion. In Australia, they have a saying to that, and I don't know if I remember it correctly. It's the cut the poppy syndrome, or how do you call that? Does somebody know what I'm talking about? It's like if you have a field, you know, mit Ähren. Getreide. Well, anything.
Yeah, filled with weed. Yeah.
No. Now, if you have a field, you know, like, and there's one plant that's growing a little higher than the others, you just got to cut it off that it's all the same size again. You know, like, so there's some cultures when somebody rises to prominence, you know, like, collectively, we cannot see that happen. You know, like, is this person thinking he's better than others? And does he think he has a better, more gift or what? You know, like, and we need to cut it down to the same level so we feel better about ourselves. There's a word for that. I don't remember it.
Is that
fruity? Whatever it is. I think you get the metaphor. Thank you. There's a special word. I don't remember. I'll look it up and tell you next week. And that's what cynical people do. And then there are other people, you know, like they just say, well, I've grown I lived life. I lived 40 years of this intensive life. And, you know, like, I just want to enjoy life a little bit and just be old in peace, you know, like, it's my season of work's over, you know, like, stay away from me, you know, like, I can't really deal with that passion. They think like that passion is like a disease, and I just don't want to be infected, you know. I put my face mask on, I don't want to get that virus anymore, you know. I don't want to be steered, you know. That can happen to you when you're older, you know. Or you just shrink, you know, like, you say, okay, intellectually, I don't need to know anymore what's going on. You know, like, if there's anything, you know, like, where help is needed, I just shy away from that. You know, like, you kind of, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually, you're just like on a declining constantly. And this is not how Priscilla and Aquila lived their lives. They were actively looking for people that they could invest in. And integrate them into their lives. They had Aquila and Aquila with them. They had Apollos with them. And then it was time for Apollos to move on. Look at this again. It says here, when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. And when he wanted to go across to Achaia, the brethren encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he had arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, demonstrating by the scriptures that Jesus was the Christ. So here comes the moment where Apollos' time in Corinth is over. And they send him on. But I picture it like that. One evening, Priscilla and Aquila were sitting together and they're saying, hey, Apollos is moving on. He's going to Achaia. What can we do for this guy? And so they say, we'll use our weight, we'll use our influence, we'll use our name, and we make sure when he gets to the next place, he succeeds. We're going to encourage him, we're going to make sure that he's taken care of, housing, food, well-received, that he can really expand his ministry. I want to close with an example of how I experienced that in my life, and maybe that inspires you. When I came to the US, I was 22, I was 24, went there to study, and did my master's in theology there. And first of all, it cost a lot of money, my goodness. If there's one gift you want to give to your children, if you're American, just teach them German, and then send them to German university, it's for free. Just saving your kids hundreds of thousands. Or teach them Chinese, but that's another story. So I had this huge burden, you know, like, of knowing this is going to cost 50,000 euros. I just used all the inheritance that I was given, you know, like, just because I wanted to get this degree. And then still I was unsure, you know, if my English was good enough. I was accepted on a probational basis because I didn't have a proper bachelor degree. And then I had to reach a certain grade within the first semester, so I was insecure. And then I've never lived abroad. I didn't know how am I gonna get around. You know, in America, you can't just hop on a bus. You know, usually you need a car. And where am I gonna live? And how am I gonna pay for all that? And where am I gonna find a church? So I was really overwhelmed. So I came to the US, and somehow some initial things were sorted out. And then there was this family. Their names were Rhoda and Stan. They lived just half a mile from the place where I was located. And they had a tremendous heart for international students. They said, well, people like me, you know, like who come with all these insecurities, we want to provide a home to them. So every week in their house, there was an international student cell group. So they invited us in. So when we came there, we got proper food. and they were just sitting there. They were so interested in hearing our stories. And, you know, like, and if we needed a ride or get somewhere, you know, you could call them and they would take you. And so those people over the years, they really became friends of mine. And so I just want to give you a glimpse into some situations. One morning, I was waking up and I felt so terrible. I was throwing up the whole night. I had fever. My body hurt, you know, and so I called Rhoda and I said, Rhoda, can you drive me to the doctor? So she drove me to the doctor, patients first. It's like one of these semi-private clinics in the US. And what they did is they took my weight, they asked me to lie down, they took my temperature, they encouraged me some, and after 3 hours they sent me home, and the bill was 600. And they said, come back tomorrow. And I remember, I was only 24, I looked at that doctor and I said, if I'm not going to die, you're never going to see me again. $600, we're just lying here for 83 hours, what in the world? And my final question was, is this appendicitis? And he said, no, I don't think so. The next night was worse than the other one. And I just knew in my heart, I have appendicitis. I just knew it. So I called Rhoda at 6:30 in the morning. And I said, Rhoda, drive me to the insurance office. Because I didn't have health insurance. I thought, if something happens, I can fly to Germany. You know, like, it's so expensive in the US. The university was offering it, but I didn't have it. I said, drive me to the insurance office. So he drove me at 7 o'clock. I went into the office and I asked, where do I need a sign? I signed that thing and I said, Rhoda, and now take me to the hospital. An hour later, I had my surgery. My appendicitis exploded while they were taking it out, you know, like, but she was the one I was able to call at 6:30. When I was finished with my studies, you know, I was embarking on this missionary journey. I said, Rhoda, Stan, what am I going to live off? And he said, well, Garen, you need to do fundraising. You need to find a team of supporters. I said, how am I going to do that? I don't know anyone in the US. He said, you know what? We're going to organize an evening for you. So they invited their friends, and then they put food on the table. And I was so insecure. I never had asked somebody for money, you know, like, and said, you just did it all. And then they did an introduction for me, and then I presented my ministry. And I was just 24, you know, like, but they used all the people they knew, they invited. I said, Garen, we can't promise you anyone will give, but just ask, you know. So they opened their home and invited their friends to give money to me. A couple of years later, you know, like, my ministry was taking more form, you know, and I said, oh, I would love to be mentored by somebody who has a lot more experience. And so Stan, he worked 15 years of his life for Louis Palau, which is after Billy Graham, probably the... And Reinhard Bonnke is probably one of the three most famous evangelists. And he hadn't seen Louis Palau for 5 years because it was in an earlier stage of his life. And so they met again in New York. And he had 5 minutes. He was just meeting him on the run. And then Rhoda came back and he said, Gernot, you know, he had only 5 minutes with Louis, but 2 minutes of the five he used to ask if you could be in his mentoring group. And that was so amazing, you know, like he just did that. A couple of years later, you know, I wanted to move to Cuba to get the churches there, do some ministries. You know, he's been working into Cuba. First thing he does, he calls up all his contacts, make sure that I'm being received. Oh, and then after he left Louis Palau's ministry, he was working for CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network. And there's a news show that's on every week. It's also being broadcasted on TBN. It's called World Christian News. And he was the producer of that. And you know what he did? He said, tell me all about the trips in Mallorca. And twice CBN did stories, you know, they were broadcasted all over the world and were being forwarded by all type of news anchors. And you know, like the whole world heard about Reach Mallorca and how we're reaching the tourists here. And it's just because he's constantly trying whatever is in his power just to push me forward. And all these examples, they might sound really out there to you, but what are you doing with the young people in this church? What are you doing with the new couple? What is it that you have inside of you? Resources, experience, maturity, business, where you can say, I want to spot those young people. I want to spot those kingdom movers. How can I invest myself into them and make sure they blossom and they bloom and they grow and they just expel the mission forward? This is the type of people they are. Do you know that I think that Mallorca is one of the most strategic places in the world? Do you know how many tourists come here every year? 10 million. Your island has 800,000 people, and there are 10 million tourists coming every year. That's like if Germany was invaded by 800 million tourists a year. It's more than 10 times the size, and they come from every country in Europe. They come from 153 nations. They come here, some come for work, some come for living a dream, some just come for vacation. And whoever you reach with the gospel, he's going to take it back to the communities he's coming from. This is a place that never is going to run dry. People will always come, and you are located here with a purpose. You don't need to move anywhere else. You know, like you're in a city like Rome or Corinth or Ephesus. I want to leave you with four questions. If this message inspires you, I know it's been a little long today, but I hope you bear with me. So I want you to do some thinking. What is God's purpose in bringing you to Mallorca? It doesn't matter why you came initially, maybe just for the weather and for a good life. But now you tend to live here. Why? You know, I was just saying last week to somebody, I was saying, if I lived in Mallorca, and maybe one day we will, I would grow tired of the, well, not tired, but I would be bored if I just came here for the weather and for the ocean and for the beach cafe. You know, like after half a year, I'd think, okay, I've done this every day now, and I know every cafe, and I've been on every hike. So what else am I going to do here? I would need a purpose. If you're thinking about moving here, please don't just do it for the weather. Do it with a purpose. Do it with a purpose. If you're here since decades, please pray again and ask God, why did you put us here? What's the purpose? Maybe some of the points today inspire you. And then here's a second thing. How can you integrate the mission in your regular life? You know, like I've given an example of Akhil and Priscilla today, but look, please don't live with this type of dualism. So here's my work, here's my life, and here's the amount of time I can give to church programs, and here's Sunday morning. That type of dualism doesn't help. Think about if God's given you a business, a work, you know, like, and we have photographers here, restaurant owners, health product sellers, online experts, we have marketing managers, product designers, it's all sitting here, you know, with kindergarten teachers, people dealing with mortgages and with buildings and properties, all these different professions that are here, placed here in this church. So please do some thinking. How am I going to integrate what God's calling me to do into my daily routine? Don't live with a dualistic concept. It's not going to work out. And chances are high, if you're working in Mallorca and you need to make money in half a year for all the year, you won't have much time for additional programs. It's got to be part of your life. It might not be easy, but think about how you can integrate it. Third thing, what type of ministry is God calling you to do? Think about what I said today, all this, what I mentioned, planting churches, championing people, housing people, providing opportunities, providing finances, teaching, preaching, house church, all that was done by lay people. It's possible. What type of ministry is God calling you anew? Are you in this phase of your life where you realize, hey, I just don't want to wait for the moment I die. I just want to continue for another 20 years like I did. I want to embrace something new that God has given me. And how can you champion kingdom movers how can you champion young people in this church? How can you champion people that God put you in contact with? What can you do to champion them? How can you serve them without patronizing them? How can you provide resources that the kingdom of mission will be expanded? How will you make sure they blossom even though you have nothing to do with what they do in their day in, day out business? If you find answers to those questions, I think your life's going to be richer. Your life's going to be thriving. And your sense of closeness to God will increase. And you will stop being bored by just being Christian day in, day out and not seeing how your faith somehow connects with the way you live your daily lives. All right, I'm done. What do you think? Yeah. Okay, maybe. Thank you. Father, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for your word. And Lord, please show us through your Holy Spirit what you're trying to tell us. Lord, make it clear. We don't want to be rushed into things, but we also don't want to be complacent, staying in the place we're at. Lord, we want to see your kingdom expand. We thank you for placing us in the places we live in. Thank you for all of us who are living in Mallorca. And please open our eyes, God, for what a strategic place you've put us in and how we can integrate, God, everything we read in your word into our lives and just live a fruitful season ahead of us. Thank you for this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.